Good morning, everybody. To our visitors, again, thank you for being here. A couple words of explanation. I'm not the regular preacher. Our regular evangelist, Scott, is helping a congregation out today who's between preachers right now, and so he's in Chambersburg helping them. And people have varying reactions when I tell them this. Our members already know. But for our visitors, I'll go ahead and tell you. Beginning of March, I came home from prison after a short stay in a transition house. And if you're looking at the smirks around you, I was not incarcerated in any way. I don't want anybody feeling the need to leave quickly. But I was asked to come down to Jacksonville, Florida. Actually, it's just south of Jacksonville, Florida, to work with some preachers, or to think about working with some preachers, that most of what they do is work inside the prisons. And they also work, one of them owns a transition house, and so it gives guys a fighting chance of staying out once they get out of prison. So instead of just doing a report about the work down there, we'll have a little bit of that. But the main point today is some life-changing lessons that you will not learn any better than when you talk with people who have been or are in the prison system. So let me bring my notes up really quickly. Okay. So the first thing, I want to tell you just a little bit about the prison that we were working at. It's called Lotte Correctional Facility. It holds anywhere between 800 and 900 prison inmates. Most of them are there for drug, alcohol, or sometimes simple assault charges. However, that is not the rule. There are some who have been in much longer, but through good behavior, going to classes, and things like that, have worked their security level down to minimum to medium security. Okay. So I want you to think about this for a second. Have you ever done anything wrong? Or maybe be more specific. Have you ever broken a law? Maybe some of you have broken some serious laws. It happens. Sometimes in our past lives, we do very regrettable things. I want you to think about everything right now that is important to you. Everything. Your job. Some of us would be okay not having that. Some of us love our jobs. Your family. Hopefully, that's important to you. What about your recreation? Your free time. What do you do? Do you like the outdoors? Do you like sports? Do you like hobbies? Think about those. Think about every single thing, even the minor things. Do you have a favorite restaurant? Most people do. Maybe a few favorite. When was the last time you went to those? Probably fairly regularly. Are you thankful for those things? Do you express your thanks? If there are people, do you express your thanks to those people? Do you express your thanks to God for those things? I hope so. But this lesson was hit home to me very, very hard. If you want, go ahead and turn to John chapter 8. And we'll be starting there in just a second. The first guy I met when I went to the transition house where I was staying, his name is Curtis Schwen, or as Denny Freeman calls him, Schwenny the Pooh. He does not appreciate that. Hopefully you won't listen to the tape of me telling you that. He's an interesting guy. He genuinely loves people. You know the kind of person I'm talking about. That just any person they meet, they just connect with them like that. I wish I was that kind of person. I'm not. It takes me a while to kind of get that connection. But Curtis loves people. His second love is motorcycles. He loves motorcycles. He knows more about motorcycles than I even knew there was to know about them. And he's now that he's out and he's working, he's actually going back to school to become a mechanic because he knows he's 42. The chances of him making a career of racing motorcycles, though already small, are almost nil. So Curtis, the first day that I met him, Denny, as a joke, called and said I was coming over to the transition house. He said, by the way, be really careful about John. He's been in law enforcement for several years, and so far, thankfully, he's only ever had to shoot one person. And I'm sitting across, you know, in the passenger seat when Denny's telling this ex-felon about this. And I was like, Denny, what are you doing to me? Are you trying to get me killed? And he said, oh, no, you're good. He said, only one person has died at the transition house. Great. That's awesome. Sadly, that was true, but it was not an assault or anything like that. It was an ex-inmate that fell back into drugs and died of an overdose a few years before. So I met Curtis. He's a rough-looking guy. You can understand the motorcycle type. He's got tattoos up and down both arms, on his neck. Some of them are prison tattoos, which if you don't... I get a little squeamish talking about this. They take a staple or sometimes any piece of wire that they can, hook up to the motor from a CD player or a tape player, and that's your tattoo gun. And apparently it hurts like crazy. So he's kind of a rough-looking guy. But I learned something very quickly. It was about lunchtime, so Denny said, let's go to Burger King, we'll get lunch. Okay, cool, Burger King's fine. I don't mind it, used to work there, try not to eat there. So we go. I have never seen somebody relish a hamburger from a fast food restaurant, mind you, more than Curtis. And then that night, we hadn't had time to go grocery shopping, because everybody goes shopping together normally on Monday nights. We hadn't had time, so we said, well, let's go. We'll get some pizza, and that'll hold us over. We'll go shopping tomorrow night. He was so excited when we chose to do that. And we went to Little Caesars. I hope you haven't gone to Little Caesars, because it's disgusting. The only reason that nobody goes, you know, when the young people are saying, hey, let's go out, let's go grab something to eat, nobody goes, hey, let's go to Little Caesars. Because everybody's like, who invited that kid? Little Caesars is where you go when you're broke, because it's cheap. I ate there a lot when I was in college. But he was so excited. And I said, Curtis, I said, why are you so excited about a Little Caesars cheese pizza? He goes, bro, I haven't had pizza for 8 years. He said, when you haven't had something that long, you enjoy it. And he did. And I want us to, I know that's a kind of comical story in a way, but I want us to think about that spiritually. In John chapter 8, verses 3 through 11, whoop, I'm sorry, that is the wrong passage. Skipped ahead in my notes. Sorry, go to 1 Thessalonians. 1 Thessalonians. 1 Thessalonians 5 and in verse 18. And this is towards the end of the letter. Actually, it's very close to the end of the letter. And Paul's giving almost some Proverbs-like advice to the Thessalonian brethren. And he says something that I think we read over really fast, but we don't think about it. So I want us to think about it tonight. Or today, sorry. So 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, we'll be reading just verse 18. Give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you. What is that saying? Give thanks for, well, I should say when. All circumstances. Obvious question, what does that include? Everything. Have you thought about that? That doesn't just mean the good times, the happy times, the fun times. That includes the bad times, sad times, the painful times. If you ever get to spend time around prisoners, you're going to meet two different types. There's the bitter ones, who their circumstances are everybody else's fault. And maybe there's truth to it. Maybe they were unjustly charged. Who knows? But everything is everybody else's fault. And then there's the guys that realize that, yeah, prison life's hard. And it is. We'll talk about that in just a second. Prison life is hard, but they're thankful And they're thankful for the little things. I think us on the outside, we don't think about it. I'm not thankful for Little Caesar's Pizza very often. I'm not thankful for Burger King. I wasn't thankful when I worked for Burger King. But we should be. Why? Because that's a blessing. Even though it's maybe not our favorite, maybe it's not the nicest, it's still a blessing from God. I hope you think about that on a daily basis. When you wake up in the morning, challenge yourself. I want to think right off the bat when I wake up, as soon as you're coherent, some of us takes a little longer. Five things. What are five things right off the bat? You haven't started your day, really, but five things that you're thankful for. And if you do that, your day is going to be better. Even if it's a lousy day, it'll be better. So to talk about the prison conditions a little bit, there's two dorms. One is an open-type dorm where you have a bunk bed, and you have one drawer about that big by that big. All of your stuff has to fit in it. That includes all of your clothing, which... If you like, in Florida, if you like light blue, you're in good luck, because that's the color you're going to wear. In Pennsylvania, I believe it's orange. All of your commissary, which is the food that you can buy in the prison that you do have to pay for. Everything, your toiletries, everything fits in this drawer. If it doesn't fit in that drawer during inspections, it's confiscated and you're not getting it back. Anything. So you have to be careful. There's a huge drug problem in the prison. And it's not the kind of drugs you guys are thinking of. Sure, sometimes they can get things smuggled in. But this is crazy. They take marshmallow cream from the commissary, let it dry out and kind of stale, spray it with creosote, sprinkle on silica gel, which you don't know what that is. It's like the stuff that you get in sometimes electronics, or probably the thing I see most in. You buy a pack of beef jerky, cut open, there's that little packet that says do not eat on every surface of it. They cut that open, sprinkle that in, and it's called K2, or synthetic marijuana, and they smoke it after spraying it with creosote. So you can imagine what that does. There's guys, and it's a very common problem. Guys go crazy, literally crazy. They are out of their mind. They'll jump around. They'll rip their clothes off. They'll throw things around. They act like animals, and it's a serious problem. So far, nobody has died from it at Lottie, but I was talking with the assistant warden. He said, unfortunately, despite our best efforts, it's only a matter of time because it's that big of a problem. So you imagine you're stuck, even if you're not doing that, which a lot of the guys aren't. You know, it only takes a few. You're stuck in a place where that's happening. You don't have freedom. All those things that you talked about that are your favorites, you don't have any of that. And it's really hard to make good decisions while you're there. So the next guy I want to talk to you about, his name's Gary Johnson. And Denny also didn't tell me about Gary, which is probably a good thing. He used to be a dog trainer in Texas. He's about late 30s, early 40s. Used to be a dog trainer, award-winning dog trainer. His original charge was bank robbery. Thankfully for him, he did not use a weapon in committing this crime, because he would have had a charge, a sentence of 25 to life. As it was, he had 15. He just passed a note to the teller. And I asked him, a common question when you're talking with prisoners is, what was your security? And by that you mean, how high a level of security were you? One is work release. He said, I was 7. I said, okay, I knew that was high, but I didn't know how high that was. I said, how high is that? He said, 8's death row. I looked at him, I said, Gary, was that just for bank robbery? He said, no. He said, I got a charge in prison. I said, what was that? He said, I chased a fellow inmate across the yard with a homemade knife. And I'm living with this guy. But this showed me something that I've never seen. Do you believe that people can change? Do you believe that you can change? I think sometimes we forget that. That we can change, that we, no matter what you've done, no matter where you've been, no matter who you were or are, you can change. Gary is the softest speaking guy I've ever met. I don't think he has a violent bone in his body anymore. And so I asked him, I said, Gary, you got to tell me the story. What happened? He said the guy looked at him wrong, and he felt disrespected, so he tried to kill him. He ended up getting pepper sprayed. He was in solitary confinement for 3 years. If you don't know what solitary confinement is, it's horrible. You're in a cell for 23 to 23 and a half hours a day, and your half hour to hour of recreation time is hardly a guarantee. And during your recreation time, that's also your shower time. So you might not get a shower for a couple days. So you're going to sponge bathe in your sink and toilet combination thing they have. You will have no human contact. You will have no visits. You will have no phone calls. Your life will be by yourself. I said, Gary, how did you change? He said, I was so bored that somebody told me about praying, so I decided to try it. And at first it didn't do anything. But he said, when you're sitting at rock bottom, you only have one way to go, and that's up. He said, and I was at rock bottom. I had nothing. And he still to this day doesn't have much. So if you want, look at the prophet Jonah. I think Jonah would have understood this feeling very well. There's some characters in the Bible that get it. David got it. You look at Psalm 51, he understands his condition. Or Psalm 22, that is a foreshadow of Christ. He understands what rock bottom is. Jonah did too. Unfortunately, he forgot. So in Jonah chapter 2, excuse me, let me get to it. There we go. In chapter 2 of Jonah, you guys know the story. We're not going to read the whole story. What's happened? Remember, Jonah was told by God, I want you to go and you're going to talk to Nineveh. And who was Nineveh? They were the enemies of the Israelites, and they were brutal to the people that they captured and conquered. And they would do some horrific things to their prisoners. They were not a well-liked people. He said, I want you to go preach to them and tell them to repent. And if they don't, they're going to be destroyed. And you see later, Jonah was hoping for the latter. He wanted them to be destroyed. But he was also scared. Imagine going and telling somebody, a strong city, you're going to be destroyed. What are they going to do to him? So Jonah was scared. He goes on the boat. The storm comes, sent by God. He realizes his mistake and tells the sailors, throw me overboard, you'll be saved. And so they do. Remember, the big fish swallows Jonah. And while he's in the belly of the fish, we'll start in verse 1 of chapter 2. Then Jonah prayed to the Lord his God from the belly of the fish, saying, I called out to the Lord out of my distress, and he answered me. Out of the belly of Sheol, or some versions might say the grave or hell, I cried, and you heard my voice. For you cast me into the deep, into the heart of the seas, and the flood surrounded me. All the waves and your billows passed over me. Then I said, I am driven away from your sight, yet I shall look upon your holy temple. The waters closed in over me to take my life. The deep surrounded me. Weeds were wrapped around my head. At the roots of the mountains, I went down to the land, whose bars closed upon me forever. Yet you brought up my life from the pit, O Lord my God. When my life was fading away, I remembered the Lord, and my prayer came to you into your holy temple. We're going to stop there. Maybe right now you're sitting in your chair thinking that your life is at rock bottom. There's many different reasons. Maybe you've faced financial setback. Maybe somebody has betrayed you and you're feeling that hurt. Maybe it's because of your own sin and the consequences of that. But if Gary can change sitting in a prison cell, so can you. You can change. And we're going to talk more about that change here in just a second. In just a minute, I should say. There's two other guys I want to talk about. One, he's the one that settled it for me. The fact that I want to go and I want to work with these guys. His name's Shane. He's about a year older than I am, roughly. Because I saw myself in Shane a lot. And I'll try to not get emotional telling the story. But Shane grew up in a good family, as did I. His father was a high-ranking military official. I believe he was a general, though I don't know. Shane had a good family. He threw all that away because he got into alcohol. He got married and has a 2-year-old son. He found out on his birthday that his wife had cheated on him. And like a lot of guys, let's face it, if you weren't Christians, you could fall into this too. His solution was he went out and he got drunk. And in the process of being drunk, though he says he doesn't remember any of it because he was that intoxicated, he got into a fight. And he beat somebody up very badly. The first thing he remembers is sitting in the prison holding cell. They hand him a paper saying, "Shane, here's your charges." And he's in there for 7 years. I asked him, I said, "Shane, what do you want? What is your dream in life?" Just in conversation, I asked him that. He said, "I don't really have dreams for myself. I don't really have plans." I said, "But I don't want my mistakes to continue." I said, "That's good." He said, "Yeah." He said, "I have a 3-year-old son who needs a dad. I don't want him to be in prison someday." He said that he's doing his best, even though since he got arrested, his wife couldn't afford their house. She had to move in with her parents in the Carolinas. He doesn't get to see his family more than 2 times a year. He said, "But my wife and I have worked out problems." He said, "I wasn't a good husband. She wasn't a good wife. We've both grown up some." He said, "I want to just have a good family and to be a good father and to be a good husband." I said, "Do you think you can do that?" He said, "God gave me a second chance." And he did. I want us to think about that. Look at John chapter 8. Move my points around and I forgot to move the chapters with them. So in John chapter 8, Jesus, you know, the Pharisees and Sadducees, they're always trying to trap Jesus, to get him to misspeak or to mess up or to say something against the law, basically so they have reason to discredit and to eventually kill him. So in John chapter 8, in verse 3, Jesus is speaking. Or Jesus is there, I should say. The Pharisees and Sadducees, they bring this woman to him. So let's read the story really quickly. Starting in verse 3. The scribes and the Pharisees brought a woman who had been caught in adultery and placed her in the midst. They said to him, "Teacher, this woman has been caught in the act of adultery. Now in the law, Moses commanded us to stone such a woman. So what do you say?" This they said to test him, that they might have some charge to bring against him. Jesus bent down and wrote with one finger on the ground. As they continued to ask him, he stood up and said to them, "Let him who is without sin among you be the first to throw a stone at her." And once more he bent down and wrote on the ground. But when they heard it, they went away one by one, beginning with the older ones. And Jesus was left alone with the woman standing before him. Now look what Jesus says. Jesus stood up and said to her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" She said, "No one, Lord." And Jesus said, "Neither do I condemn you. Go, and from now on, sin no more." Do you value your second chances? We've all sinned. We're all guilty. We know that. But do you value the second, and sometimes third, or tenth, or 20th chances that we have? I hope so. Shane did. That was something that made me realize really quickly. Value what you have when you have it. Like I said, Shane had a good family. They tried to keep him doing what was right. His father tried to get him into good schools, maybe the military, to keep him out of trouble. But he didn't want that. He said something, and this is what hit me really hard. He said, "I threw all their good advice and all their continuing efforts back in their faces." I think some of us have seen that too. When a brother or sister comes to you, maybe it's an older brother or sister, maybe it's a younger one, it doesn't matter. And they give you that advice. They say, "You know, I'm really concerned about you. Are you thankful for that?" You know, in Proverbs it talks about if you correct a wise man, he will love you for it. And there's other verses that talk about correcting a fool. That was what hit me hard. Because if you were unfortunate enough to know me in high school and even some in college, I did not value correction. And still to this day, there's times where somebody will say something to me, "You know, Jonathan, I think you really need to work on that." Or, hey, you messed this up, and I don't want to hear it. I think a lot of us feel that way. But think about that. They're looking out for you. They want you to make good decisions today because your future is built on what you do right now. That's true for anything. Financially, if you save money right now, that helps your future. If you waste money right now, that hurts your future. Spiritually, you do what's right now, your future's better. You make mistakes, you can be forgiven of them, sure. All these guys I'm talking about are your brethren. They've been forgiven. God's forgiven them. But they still have those consequences. So value advice. Value people that time and time again will come to you and try to help you improve. And value when you do mess up those second chances. The last guy I want to talk to you about, I don't really know him. And let me explain why. I was at the transition house for 8 days. Rodney, his name's Rodney Wells, he was only there the last 3 days. But I heard his story before he got there, and I loved him already. And I think you will too when you see why. Rodney was in, like a lot of the guys, had a drug problem. And sometimes burglary, things like that, they have to pay for their drug habit. That goes along with it. So he had some drug-related charges. He got out of prison, but he became a Christian in prison. So he's a Christian, he gets out of prison. What's the first thing you think he would do? A lot of the guys look for a job because some of them have debts they have to pay off. Think about it. You're in prison, your house loan, you're going to default on that. Your car loan, if you haven't paid your car off, that's gone. If you have student loans, you're not going to be paying those off. You don't have any money. You're not going to make any money in prison, really. You work for some of the best jobs, you work for a dollar an hour. So you're not going to be paying your debts. So you're going to be in trouble financially. So a lot of the guys, the first thing they want to do is they want to get their driver's license back and get a job. Rodney, thankfully for him, his car was already paid for and he had some financial help from family members. So he gets out of prison, he's in Florida, and he realized he still had a charge in Michigan. It was non-extraditable, which means even though he's been arrested, they're not going to extradite him to Michigan to face that charge. So if he stays out of the state of Michigan, he's home free. Here's the beautiful thing. That's not what Rodney did. Rodney, on his own money, drove 16 hours in one day to Michigan and turned himself in on a charge that could have given him an additional 3 years in prison. Thankfully, the judge was lenient. I'm sure he was more than a little surprised when somebody drives that far to face a non-extraditable charge. The judge gave him 3 months. So he got back right at the end of my stay there. And so I want you to think about that. Have you wronged somebody? Does somebody have something against you? Is there something you need to make right? Let's think about that. Look at, excuse me. I completely didn't write that down. I want you to think about what does Jesus say? You know, we just had the offering, and that's an important thing. And it's good to support preachers in other parts of the country. We've got preachers in Florida, New York, Boston, here, that we help. And they teach the Bible to hundreds, thousands of people, hopefully. And that's a great thing. We support each other financially in times of need for medical expenses, things like that. And that's a good thing. But what does Jesus say when you bring a gift to bring an offering, but you realize that you have something, that a brother has something against you? What does he tell you to do? Go to that brother. Leave your gift and go. Go take care of it. I hope that's something that you do. When you realize that there's a problem that you need to fix, go fix it. And we've been studying in 1 Corinthians. I just finished a study with that, and then Brian's been teaching it in the morning class. What were the Corinthian brothers doing? When they had problems with each other, what were they doing? They're taking each other to court. They were suing one another. And you look at Paul's reaction to that foolishness. He says, work it out amongst yourselves. Is there not a brother there that can help you? Why take it to the courts where you're already condemned? If there's a problem, fix it. So that's the last guy I want to tell you about, but there's a group of men I want to tell you about. The Sunday I was there, I was only able to be there for one Sunday. Denny said, we're going to go, we have morning services at Kingsley where Denny preaches. He said, and then we're going to go to Lodi, and they have the afternoon worship service for the prisoners there. It's kind of interesting because we have to bring in all the Lord's Supper stuff. You set it down at the security counter. One of the deputies opens it, looks through everything for security reasons. I wish I could have a picture or recording of this, but trying to bring a cell phone in can be up to a misdemeanor charge, so I left my cell phone in the car intentionally. And I'll be honest, I was very intimidated doing this. I'm a big guy. I don't get intimidated by people very regularly. In fact, when I was in college, one of the things we like to do is in the workout room, you put down padding on the floor and we had boxing gloves and we would box for fun. You know, there wasn't anything on it. My boxing record was 1-0 because I accidentally gave a guy a bloody nose the first punch. And so I can handle myself with people. You know, in the fire department, we've had to work with some dangerous people, some intoxicated people before, and I've always come out all right, so I'm not too worried about it. But when I walked in this room, there were probably 50 to 60 men, all wearing blue jumpsuits. There were five of us that were wearing civilian clothes. I'm not good at math, but I don't like those odds. And so I was more than a little nervous being in this environment. And plus, it's also unfamiliar. Denny just walked in like it was no problem. What happened in the next hour is something I will never forget for the rest of my life. Well, I should say, when we walk in, every time you go to the prison, Denny was talking to the desk sergeant. He handed me this thing. I thought it was like a garage door opener at first. I said, what's that? He said, oh, that's your panic alarm. And I was like, Do I need that? He said, well, I've only needed it 3 times in the last 10 years, so you should be okay. He was kidding. He's never pushed it yet. So I'm a little nervous. I go in there, and we were running a little bit late, but it's right. We waited until one of the songs was over. We go and so we sit down. And I look around, and you have guys that have obvious gang ties, or had, looking at just at their tattoos, you can see the gang signs. I thought about how many of these guys through being drug dealers or assault charges, the men in that room had probably combined hurt hundreds if not thousands of people, damaged people's lives, done terrible things. But then they sang the next song. And if you want, you can go ahead and open your songbook. We're going to sing the song in just a second. I asked Jacob if he would mind leading it, and he very graciously said that he did not mind. They sang Victory in Jesus. It's 717 in your green books, not your supplements. And I thought about it. So I'm in here with about 60 guys. These men could not carry a tune in a bucket. It was bad. You think most of them, probably half of them, don't even have a high school diploma. And I'm sure all of them didn't really pay attention in music class if they had it. So the singing, by the world standards, was horrible. There's no other word for it. It was bad. But they had something that I think a lot of times we don't. Joy. They're in prison. Like I said, prison's a terrible place. You have guys on drugs going crazy. Oh, the dorms in the prison, I forgot to tell you, don't have air conditioning. This is Florida. If you've ever been in Florida in the summertime, imagine being in a room with about 100 sweaty guys. It's not going to be pleasant. Guys get into fights just because they're irritated. It's rough. But these guys came in, and though they lacked talent, they understood these words very well. Look at just the first verse of the song. We're going to read that, and that's basically going to be the invitation, so Jacob heads up. So the first verse, I heard an old, old story, how a Savior came from glory, how he gave his life on Calvary to save a wretch like me. I heard about his groaning, of his precious blood's atoning. Then I repented of my sins and won the victory. Oh, victory in Jesus, my Savior forever. He sought me and bought me with his redeeming blood. He loved me ere I knew him, and all my love is due him. He plunged me to victory, beneath the cleansing flood. I want you to think about that tonight, or today. I keep saying that. Think about your position. Maybe you're not a Christian. Maybe you realize that you need to be. That spiritually, you're like a group of men that even in the prison, the prisoners do not talk about. They're called lifers. It's pretty obvious why. These are men that through murder charges or aggravated assaults, who knows what else, sometimes serious drug charges, will never see freedom again. Their freedom will be their death. One guy described it to me as basically those guys live in their tomb because they will die in that prison. Not in Wadi, but in other facilities. Those guys are doomed, basically. Their life, as anybody knows it, is over. Spiritually, is that your condition? Are you still stuck in your own sin? Are you doomed to a life sentence? And by the way, by life, I mean eternity. That will not end. An eternity separated from God and torment. It's an unpleasant thing to think about, but it's true, and it's valuable for all of us to think about. Or are you like these men who, though they have charges, some of them serious, some of which will spend a long time in prison, they already have freedom. They have God. They have joy. They have forgiveness. And they have hope. You can have that. Maybe you're like Rodney and you realize, you know, I'm already a Christian. There's things I need to take care of. Go take care of it. If it's with a brother, take care of it. If it's with a family member, take care of it. Maybe you've been dishonest at work. Take care of it. Do what you need to do. Take care of those problems. Or maybe you've never started on that road and you want to know what freedom looks like. You can experience spiritual freedom today. You can confess Christ. We can baptize you today. And then that will be the end of your sentence. Whatever your need is, let us know in any way that you feel comfortable as we stand and sing.